Hey there, this is Heather McAllister, a health coach for women in midlife. I went from feeling fat and tired at 40 to living my best life ever 9 years later. I now feel better than ever in my body and in my clothes. I feel a renewed sense of purpose and energy, and I'm here to share that with you. It was not an easy path. I had a lot of missteps along the way. But all those missteps have made it easier to help women facing the same struggles. So I created the Get Better with Heather podcast to give you simple and effective strategies to do the same thing. So if you're a woman in midlife and you're struggling to feel good in your body, to take off extra weight without obsessing over food, to get motivated and get moving, then this podcast is for you. Hit the subscribe button to stay up to date, and let's get started. So today we're going to talk about macronutrients and how this plays a role in weight loss, energy production, body composition, all the good stuff. And I'm going to go over just the basics of macronutrients to give you an idea of what this all means in terms of all of those things to help your body to be healthier, to lose weight in a healthy, balanced way. But also, just to put it in perspective, some of the things that we've done wrong, we're going to talk about calorie counting, how that plays a role, and how to use macronutrients in a very common sense way to help you make better decisions for weight loss and just overall health, because we do know that weight loss and healthy weight loss is an indicator of better health, right? So if we are overweight, it's a signal that metabolically there are some things going on in our bodies that are not great. And that's kind of where I started from. I started noticing, you know, that I just couldn't lose weight. And most of the weight was centered around my belly. I also felt like crap. I had no energy. And, you know, I also had in my head the way I was taught to eat back in the 80s and 90s. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that and how we had it wrong and a better way to look at this stuff and a way that works for you, because there are a lot of experts out there. There's a lot of disagreement and everybody has their opinions. I'm going to share my opinions with you and what they are and why. But also, ultimately, everything that you take from this hopefully is helping you choose what's right for you, not for me. So what should you know, in my opinion, about macronutrients? So macronutrients are the basic components of energy in your food. And there's three main categories: carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. Little different than micronutrients, which are the smaller components of all of our food. Those are the vitamins, the minerals, and the nutrients that we get from the food that we eat. So if you're tracking and following a macro food plan, you're looking at the ratios of these three basic energy sources for your meals. So if you think about foods like the ketogenic diet, which is higher in fat, the carnivore diet, which is more high protein. Or if you remember back to the diet craze of the 80s and 90s, which was low fat and high carb, which is kind of where we're still at with the standard American diet, or what I like to term the SAD diet, because it prefers high carb. And I think it has probably contributed to a lot of the issues that we're having now with obesity and type 2 diabetes. But understanding macros can help you plan your meals and create a plate. And that's how I really look at it. I look at it visually. If you like to think of things in numbers better, then you might want to think about the ratios. But overall, understanding macros, and you could use macros as an actual diet plan. And I'm going to get into that a little bit more because I really don't like the term diet plan. But some people really like the numbers and they like to count and they like to be held accountable. And sometimes that works better for them. So again, everybody's a little bit different. But my goal with most people that I'm working with is to make everything more intuitive so that you're providing your body with what it needs and realizing how you feel afterwards and where you see the best results. So to get into the nitty-gritty of all of this, there are three major categories of macronutrients, and the first one being protein. And I put this first because I feel like this is the most important for, number one, for women in midlife, because this is something that I find a lot of people have a hard time getting into their diet. And it is really, really helpful in healthy weight loss and in a number of other ways too. But it is probably my preferred macronutrient at this point. They're all really, really important, but it's the one that I will first focus on when I'm planning my meals is, do we have a healthy protein? And this includes things like fish, beef, poultry, eggs, and vegetarian sources, tofu, tempeh. And to a lesser extent, you could get protein from grains and vegetables. They're not great sources of proteins because you're usually vegetables are lower in that macronutrient, and grains happen to have, more carbohydrate and higher calorie. But proteins are really important because they are actually going to build muscle. And this is crucial if you are a woman in midlife. Building muscle is always important. But as we get older, we do tend to lose lean muscle mass. So it is crucial that we are giving our body the amino acids, which are the basic components of protein, to build muscle. It is the seat of our metabolism. Your muscle houses most of your mitochondria, which you might remember from science class, is the basic component or the powerhouse of the cell. So that's basically your seat of your metabolism is right there. It's in the muscle mainly. And we need to have healthy muscle. We need protein to have healthy muscle. And if we continue to break down and lose muscle and never build it back up, then we are looking at a metabolism that's going to struggle. Protein is also essential for enzymes. It's needed for creating hormones and neurotransmitters and a healthy immune system. The second macronutrient is fat. And this is the most energy dense and higher calorie per gram. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And I'm just going to say here, I'm going to talk about the healthy fats like olive oil, avocado, whole eggs, coconut oil, butter, ghee, nut butters. These are really, really important. They are not the enemy, and they are really crucial for our cell structure. Our cell membranes are made of lipids, and you want nice, healthy cell membranes because that basically makes up your whole body. And you need to be able to digest healthy fats in order to absorb certain fat-soluble vitamins. So if you're not getting enough fat, you could be deficient in those vitamins. If you struggle to break down fats, like if you have a gallbladder issue, then you may not be absorbing or have the fats in your body to help absorb certain vitamins. They are really critical for hormones. We know as we go through midlife, whether or not you're in menopause or whether or not your doctor says you're in perimenopause, the changes start to happen in late 30s typically and early 40s. Those hormones rely on healthy fat in your diet. And if you're a little bit off balance from all these changes, you could be more off balance if you're not eating a diet that supports good hormone production. So it is really, really critical. Again, as we go through midlife, it is crucial that we're getting healthy proteins, quality proteins, and healthy fats for our balanced hormone production. And then lastly, carbs, who aren't, you know, we're not, carbs get a bad rap. They are not the enemy. It's just that our standard American diet and our culture provides us with a lot of crappy carbs. And it has created a problem, coupled with the fact that as we go through midlife, we have a harder time with carbs for many reasons. There's so many reasons why I'm not going to get into all the details about it. But carbs aren't the enemy, except that some carbohydrates processed in our body is like sugar or straight sugar, even though they may be more complex, and create hormonal imbalances. That's probably more of a topic for another day. It's something that I focus and think about quite a bit. But carbs are basically sugars, starches, and fibers. And veggies, which are the above ground veggies, are more complex. They have more fiber and they have less of a sugar impact. But carbohydrates do impact our sugar levels in our blood. They provide us with quick energy. So it is something that we need in our body for the most part. Some people who are in ketogenic diet say we don't, and they may do perfectly well on the ketogenic diet. Not everybody does, but carbohydrates do provide us with quick energy, and the energy that we get from carbohydrates gets stored in our muscle. Again, that's why it's so important to have healthy muscle, because if there's no place for the sugar and the starches to go when we digest it, it's in our blood and then gets stored as fat. So we need healthy muscle tissue, and they get stored in the liver. So, so aside from vegetables, fruits, grains, beans, lentils are also carbohydrates. So vegetables, fruits, grains, beans, and lentils. And just think of all of the, you know, bread foods, all the pastas, all of that stuff are carbohydrates as well. So I kind of alluded to before, there are these diet plans that are kind of like macronutrient diets. Keto is one of them. And what they do is they have ratios of each of these three basic components of our food, and they favor certain ratios. So the ketogenic diet is 75 typically. There are variations of all of this, but 75% of your diet would be coming from fat, such as eggs, butters, olive oil, avocado, high-fat foods. And then there's 20% protein and 5% net carb. Then we've got the traditional standard American diet, which favors carbohydrates. So the bulk of the standard American diet is 50% carbohydrates, which for most of us is not good for us. And we're learning that. And that's why we have a big problem, I think, with type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome in the US. So in my opinion, our exact macro ratio, so what you should be eating, whether or not it's 30% protein, 40% protein, 10% protein, you know, 40% carbs, whatever, in my opinion, is something that is very individual for you, the specifics of it, because some people will respond better overall to one or the other. It's also something that you need to be able to live with. So, you know, if you love the ketogenic diet and it works for you and you're tolerating it, meaning, you know, all your blood work, chemistry, all of that is great and you're happy and you're thriving and you've got the energy, that's great. That works for you. It may not work for somebody else. So everybody's individual. We all have different genetics, different gut microbiome, which influences, you know, how we process foods, all of that. So the exact ratio of what your macros should be, I think, again, are kind of individual and sometimes need a little bit of experimenting. So I want to just kind of go over what the difference is between macro diets and counting calories, which is your typical diet. You know, it's kind of like the Weight Watcher diet, all those diets where you're like, okay, you have 1,500 calories, have at it. eat whatever you want as long as your energy, which is your calories that you're putting in your body, is going to be less than what you're using. Now, having said that, if you are going to cut calories, you probably want to know what your metabolic rate is, because you need to know how much energy you're using throughout the day. And that could be very different from person to person based on, you know, your lifestyle, your hormonal structure, your gut microbiome, all of those, which is one of the reasons why I think counting calories really isn't effective, because we don't know necessarily what our bodies are doing. Our basal metabolic rate, most of us don't really know what that is accurately. And also, we don't know sometimes what hormonally is going on, what's going on with our blood sugar levels and our insulin levels, which, if you're only counting calories and you're eating a ton of sugar, but still staying within your calorie range, may really backfire on you, because your hormones are going to drive your behavior underlying everything, because they're going to make you want to eat and make it really difficult to have the willpower to overcome that urge to eat if your hormones are out of whack. So again, counting calories can be helpful, and it is usually a part of the whole figuring out what your macro range is, but just counting calories, I think, is really ineffective. Now, having said that, it is, when it comes down to actually losing weight, if you are eating more calories, meaning you have more energy going into your body than you're using on a daily basis, you won't lose weight. So there are nuances here. This isn't black or white. You do have to take in less energy than you're expending, but it's not the whole picture, which is why I'm not a huge fan of diets and calorie counting. And to be honest with you, even macro counting, but I'm going to get into that a little bit more as we go into detail about what protein is and, you know, all the good stuff. So we're going to get into the details of all of that. So first, I'm going to talk about protein. And in my opinion, we need to prioritize protein. It is the key to a healthy metabolism, and I think the key to weight loss for most women, especially in midlife and older. Why? First of all, protein is going to provide you with some satiety, and it helps to balance our insulin levels with the food that we're eating as well. It takes more energy, or a little bit more energy, to actually metabolize protein versus carbohydrates. And it helps to build muscle mass, which I said before is really the seat of your metabolism. If you are losing, and this is, you know, contributing to weight gain as we get older, and a lot of people will say, oh, you're just getting older, expect to gain weight. Well, that's true, but you could work a little bit harder at building your muscle. And as long as you're getting good quality protein, you know, that gap, that tendency can be minimized. You may not have the metabolism of a 20-year-old, but you can have a really good, healthy metabolism if you have really healthy muscle tissue, which you need protein for. And because of other factors and other hormones, growth hormone and things like that, that do decline as we get older, we have to work a little harder. And so prioritizing protein in our diet, I think, is crucial. And again, protein has the basic building blocks, the amino acids that make up our muscle tissue and other things. But we're talking about muscle, we're talking about metabolism. So protein is crucial. And when we're talking about that, so is exercise. And some people will say that you don't need to exercise to lose weight. And well, you don't necessarily. But if you want to have a healthy metabolism, you need to be working on your muscle tissue. And that becomes more and more important after 40 years old. So when you're in your 20s and 30s, we may not lose that much muscle. It may not have as much of an impact if we're not exercising. We might be able to lose weight by eating less and all of that. And you can eat less and lose weight in your 40s and not exercise. But again, we need to exercise for longevity, for a healthier metabolism. So what happens when you exercise? You're creating little micro tears in your muscle, and this stimulates this recovery process to build back and grow your muscles. When you do that, you are actually stimulating the growth of mitochondria. And the mitochondria, again, are the basic cells that provide energy to our bodies. Now, as mitochondria age and get sick, they don't extract energy as well from the food that we're eating. So that's why it's so important to be stimulating new mitochondria. And that happens when you exercise, when you stress your body a little bit. You're stressing your body in a healthy way. You can't overdo it. So you have to always have balance, but in general, building muscle. And so when we're talking about building muscle, we're really talking about strength training. And it could be body weight. It could be weights. We're not talking about running and cardio. That actually will work against you. It's good for heart, cardiovascular health. So it's not a bad exercise. But if that's the only exercise you're doing and you're in the 40 plus group, really think about how to incorporate some really good strength training, because the cardio stuff, it can be helpful for other reasons, but not necessarily building new muscle mass. So we want to build muscle. We need adequate protein to do that. And we want good quality protein in our diet. And I will say that there's a lot of poor quality protein out there. And you have to be really important if you're vegan or vegetarian. I do not, for me, I have a hard time on either one of those diets. It does not sustain me. Some people are happy on those diets. That's great. But just make sure that you're getting enough protein. It's a little bit harder, and it takes a bit more effort to get the amount of protein that you need to maintain muscle mass and stay healthy and all that. All right, so what am I talking about when I'm talking about protein? Now, the recommendations are all over the place when it comes to protein. And if you look at what, the American government says that you should have for protein for body weight, it's going to vary greatly from what some of the more like health and nutrition people are telling you. So again, this is a gray area. This is an area I think you need to figure out what's best for you, where you're getting the best results, where you feel the best. Now, I want to say that a lot of people say, I don't like protein. I don't want to eat it. If you've been traditionally eating a pretty high carb diet, you're going to crave high carbs for many reasons. I'm not going to get into all the details about it. It takes a little bit of a switch to go from, changing the ratios and eating more protein in your diet. It's definitely going to take some effort. So I just want you to keep an open mind about that and your mindset about and thoughts about certain food groups. So I'm just going to leave it at that. It's really something that in coaching comes up quite a bit. So general recommendations for sedentary women. So if you are sitting most of the day getting, maybe less than 5,000 or 4,000 steps a day, you're pretty sedentary. The recommendation is 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight, meaning that's adequate. That's how much you should be eating. However, having between 1.2 and 1.6 kilograms per 1.2 and 1.6 grams per kilogram of body weight will help support weight loss. This comes down to 0.55 to 0.72 per pound of body weight. And I'm going to get into what that is in a second. And if you're trying to maintain muscle mass, somewhere between 0.8 and 0.1 grams per kilogram of body weight, You can look these up online. I'm going to give you a tip on that as well. Bottom line here is there's a wide range and it depends on how active you are. So if you're an athlete, you're going to need more protein to repair muscle, to heal, all of that. If you've had surgery, there's just so many different conditions where you're going to need more protein. So it's going to vary. The best sources, the best sources, meaning the sources that have the most protein in them, kind of packed in there, are going to be animal proteins such as chicken, pork, fish, beef. Eggs, are a good protein source, and so is dairy, relative, but definitely your chicken, your fish, and your beef are going to be give you the most bang for your buck when it comes to protein. Plant sources can include beans, nuts, seeds, and legumes. You have to eat more of those to get the protein that you need. And vegetarian sources are incomplete proteins. So if you are a vegetarian, you have to just make sure that you are getting complete proteins, because there are certain amino acids that our body does not make, and you need to get from your food sources. So for a 145-pound woman, this may look like, so if we're looking at the general range of protein per day, it looks like about 80 to 100 grams of protein a day. You want to space that out. So you do not want to eat one meal with 100 grams of protein, because your body could only use so much at any one point in time. So you're better off, like, let's say you wanted to, if you figured out what your protein intake should be, ballpark for the day, you want to space it out. So for me, let's say mine is 90 grams a day. That would be about 30 grams per meal. So at breakfast, I'd want to try to have something close to 30. Again, I'm not really good with exacts. I don't really like to live that way. So I eyeball a lot of stuff and I estimate a lot of stuff, and that works for me. Some people like more specifically, they want to measure it all out. That's fine. There are macro counters for that. Okay. So we're talking a little bit here about, and I alluded to this before, your basal metabolic rate. If you're not building muscle, then your basal metabolic rate might be a little lower, right? So that will, that's going to affect how many calories you want to get in, and it's also going to affect the protein, the amount of protein that you need. But protein is really important for basal metabolic rate. So if you are cutting your calories or you're not getting enough protein in, I know I'm repeating myself here, but that's going to impact your metabolism and how slow or fast it is, right? So it's going to impact everything else when it comes to being able to lose weight. So another, thing I'm going to just drive home about protein, because if you haven't guessed it, I think protein is really important. It helps to promote satiety and it reduces cravings. So if you are looking to lose weight and you're looking at what do I put on my plate, and you're worried about being hungry, you're worried about not having energy, make sure that you're getting enough protein. It's really, really important. Okay, I've been a little vague about what 30 grams of protein looks like, what this all means. If you're really interested, you can download a free macro counter. I have one on my phone. I have an Apple iPhone. There are apps out there. You put your age, your weight, you put your activity level, and it will give you how many calories you need to eat in order to lose weight. And you can kind of play around with the macro. It'll give you certain macros, but you could also, change around the ratios depending on, like, if you'd like to be keto or if you want to be protein or whatever, you can change the ratios and it'll tell you exactly how many grams of each food you should be eating. And then basically, you know, you're weighing your food and you're measuring it out and you're making your plate according to that. That type of thinking kind of drives me crazy, and it may for a lot of you. Again, you know, if you need that, do it. You do you. You do what works for you. If you need that just as a general idea, do it as the exercise of figuring out, because a lot of times we're overeating. Our plates are huge. We put more on our plates than we realize. So sometimes we're really just like our idea of what we need for our body to sustain or lose weight is grossly out of reality, right? So this will really, really be helpful. The other aspect of this, the other side of that is if you've been chronically dieting, you could be cutting out so much that you're not getting enough calories, you're not getting enough protein, and your body is stubbornly holding onto every calorie and extracting every possible calorie from the food you eat because it's kind of in that starvation mode. So my suggestion with that, if you are going to count calories, if that's sort of a tactic you feel you need, then you really don't want to cut calories more than about 400 a day from what you're eating. And you may need to even shift by eating a little bit more if your body has adapted to eating really very low calorie. So you might have to have a little metabolic shift there, which I know a lot of people don't want to hear that because they want to lose weight now. But sometimes you have to really shift your metabolism and get healthy before you can start losing weight. And that's just, you know, that's sort of the reality of the situation. So sometimes you have to slow down to speed up. Okay. When we're talking about protein at each meal, I like to visually look at the food that I'm eating and decide like what is a serving size. So if I'm eating an animal protein, let's say a piece of chicken, generally a serving of chicken or pork or even beef, any one of those animal proteins, in general, about the size of a deck of cards or the size of your palm is about 20 or so, maybe 21 to 25 grams of protein per serving. So if you think about having that as your main portion, right? Let's say you want to have about 30 grams of protein at your meal. You have a size of chicken that's about the size of a deck of cards. That's about 20 grams. Then you might have a piece of cheese, or a slice of cheese, which is about 5 or 6 grams. You know, that's getting you a little bit closer to that 30 grams, right? And then you might have other carbohydrates, mainly carbohydrates that have a little bit of protein on your plate as well, that kind of add up to the 30 grams of protein. So I like to use those visual cues. I really do start with protein. What's my protein source? It's going to keep me full. It's going to help me build muscle. It's going to give me all the amino acids that I need for a healthy body. And I want to make sure that I'm getting generally 30 grams of protein. Now, if I'm working out and I'm doing strength training, it's going to be a little bit more. And again, I know I keep saying this, it's going to be different for everybody. So you really have to sit down and figure out. I like to get an idea. So I do think that the macro counter, if you put in the numbers and it gives you like a general idea of how much protein you should be eating every day, I think it's a really good thing for you just to have an idea of, and then you can kind of go from there and go a little less, a little more. But it's a good ballpark, right? So other things as far as protein goes, again, a slice of cheese is about 5 grams of protein. 6 ounces of Greek yogurt is about 12 to 18 grams of protein. Really watch the sugar in some of these. Reading labels is really important because labeling on a lot of the foods that we get, they're very deceiving, especially protein bars. So if you're looking at a protein bar that's giving you 20 grams of protein, make sure you're taking a look at how much sugar is in there. And anything over a couple of grams of sugar, probably not your best option. So a half a cup of beans is about 8 grams of protein. So if you look at piece of chicken, which is giving you about 20 grams or more, right? For close. So let's say chicken is about the size of a deck of cards. It's probably close to a half a cup, maybe a little bit more. And a half a cup of beans is giving you 8 grams of protein. So just be aware, beans are a source of protein, but you're not getting nearly as much protein out of that for the amount of food that you're having to eat. Okay. And then 1 cup. So if you think of, you know, this visual guide, right? We said palming your hand or a deck of cards is a serving of meat. 1 cup of something is about the size of your fist. So it's another good visual to have. So you don't have to use measuring cups, especially if you're out and about. Plant sources, you know, I've alluded to this a little bit before, can be a source of protein. They're not as significant. It's a little bit harder to get more protein in your diet. They're higher in carbohydrates. Vegetables and plant foods are a healthy carb, I think. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in the section on carbs. But let's say you want to try to get about 90 grams of protein in a day, right? What does that look like? So I'm going to break this down because this is an area where people are like, I just can't get enough protein. It's really hard. So if you're shooting for that, your breakfast could have, you know, two whole eggs, a slice of cheese, a half a cup of Greek yogurt, and then 3 chicken sausage links. And that's giving you about 27 grams of protein, right? Lunch, 4 slices of deli turkey, a slice of cheese, and 10 almonds is about 31 grams of protein. And then for dinner, let's say you have a burger and salad with some added walnuts and chickpeas. That's probably a little closer to almost 40 grams of protein. So that's just basically like, in a day, how do you get to 90 grams of protein? So I'm looking just at the protein here. We're not even adding in other sides and other things, other macronutrients, but that would be, you know, kind of close to 90 grams of protein per day. So just to wrap things up, there's no right or wrong here. I do think it'll help for you to go through the process of figuring out in some general way what your macronutrients can be. I won't say should be, because I think that should is going to depend on how your body reacts to it. You know, I wear a continuous glucose monitor that really helps me dial in the amount of carbohydrates that I'm eating, because I can see what it's doing to my blood sugar levels. Without that, I think you have to go with how you're feeling, and are you seeing changes in your body composition as a result of the changes that you're making, and how do you feel? You may not feel necessarily really great for many reasons when you start to play around with and change what you're eating, and you may not be motivated to it to eat more protein, let's say, because I do think that, again, you should probably be eating more protein if that's something that you're struggling to include. Your body, if you're used to carbohydrates, is going to want carbohydrates. Your gut microbiome is actually going to influence your food cravings. The bacteria, when you feed, so let's look at food as fertilization and your gut microbiome as soil. When you fertilize soil, that's mainly carbohydrate bacteria, or bacteria that breaks down carbohydrates, and then you want to now cut back on that, that bacteria is actually going to create symptoms for you, create cravings, and influence what you want. So there is a transition period, and that's normal. And so when people say, I don't like to eat protein, I'm not good at protein, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, there are changes that have to happen. And yes, our body likes carbohydrates. It favors them because it's a survival thing. Carbohydrates provide a lot of dense energy. And there's a reason why certain areas of our brain get triggered and dopamine gets released when we eat it. It's rewarding. It makes us feel good. There's all kinds of good stuff that goes on there. But we can reward ourselves and feel good when we're eating healthier. And that transition can be made. And I think it really starts with the mindset of having an open mind about it. So if you have any questions or any comments, go feel free to reach out and let me know. What do you think? What are your preferred ways of eating? Okay, so carbohydrates are not the devil. They're not evil. They are really good for energy. Vegetables are a huge source of carbohydrates, and they give us so much good stuff. So I like to think of carbohydrates as the beneficial carbohydrates, and the carbohydrates that I do need to limit significantly, because there's a really big difference in this group, right? There's the really, really good carbohydrate that's not going to affect your blood sugar so much. And then we've got the really crappy, bad for us carbohydrates that we associate with fast food, processed foods, all of that stuff. I don't limit the amount of vegetables that I eat. And I'm gonna clarify that a little bit. I do not limit the above ground vegetables that I eat very much. So things like leafy greens, tomatoes, asparagus, peppers, cucumbers, zucchini, squash, all of those have a minimal impact on my blood sugar, and they're filled with all kinds of phytonutrients. And for our gut health, those nutrients are really important. The fiber in them is really important. And also, as a woman with hormonal needs, there are things and nutrients in vegetables that are really, really helpful for our hormone balance and helping with oxidative stresses. So oxidative stresses age us. Some of these phytonutrients that we get from colorful vegetables really help our body to combat that aging stress from some of the things that we're exposed to, whether it's stress, could be food stress, could be environmental stress, could be emotional stress, all of those things. So carbohydrates provide essential vitamins and fiber again. And then we have the below ground vegetables like potatoes, and they are healthy for us. They have good nutrients in them, but you might need to limit those if you are struggling with weight loss resistance, because they can be tricky for our blood sugar balance. So not saying you have to eliminate them, but definitely something that you have to be aware of. I would not make them a significant portion of my plate. So if I'm making a plate, I'm going to start with my protein. I'm going to make sure that I have about the palm of my hand, maybe a little bit more of a good quality protein on my plate. And then I'm going to pile up the vegetables. I do not count that. They are going to fill you up. They're crunchy. They're going to give you lots of good fiber. Again, let's assume that you're digesting all of this well. And then a much smaller portion, and I don't even include it in all my meals, are the more complex starchy carbs, I should say. Then we have grains. And there is a lot of conflicting ideas regarding grains out there in general. Grains can provide essential nutrients. However, not everyone tolerates them well, especially if you're talking about wheat gluten and gluten in general. Or if you have any kind of insulin resistance. Now, for me, brown rice and sugar pretty much are like the same thing to my blood sugar. They're not really good for it. Not saying brown rice is evil, but for me, my body doesn't process it very well, at least not on an empty stomach without a ton of protein. So grains can be tricky for some people. And some are worse than others. And for some of us, like I said, brown rice, white rice, even sweet potatoes can all have the same effect on my blood sugar levels. So I have to be really careful with them. Brown rice, quinoa, whole grains, they can be really healthy. They can provide you with good nutrients. Again, it just can be problematic for some people. I would say, and I hate to ever just like completely cut things out of my diet, but as much as possible, I have really, and this has been a journey. This isn't something that I necessarily was just cut out completely one day and that was it. But any kind of, you know, just regular pasta, white bread, all of that is pretty much out of my diet because there's not a whole lot that it does for me other than maybe my emotional attachment to it, which again is a process. So I don't really miss it so much anymore. Sometimes I'll have a slice of pizza or a regular hamburger bun and there's not a whole lot of drama around it, but it's a very, very, very small part of my diet. And if you are looking to lose weight and you've been struggling with it, I would seriously look at ways of swapping out those refined flours for other things. And there's all kinds of great ways that you can do that and not feel deprived. So fats is the last macronutrient we're going to talk about. And there's a lot of different opinions about fats too, as you can tell. Like the whole nutrition scene is very opinionated. And, you know, there are some people that are just like, this is the only way to eat and this is the best thing and avoid this and avoid that. And my opinion, there's a lot of nuances for everything out there, for every evidence of this, there's evidence of that. there's very few, very, you know, stark realities when it comes to nutrition, because we're all so different and we all processing differently. And anyway, that's my take. But there are some basic principles that I think everyone should keep in mind, and it can be really, really helpful. So I talked earlier about fats and the ketogenic diet. There are some really awesome healthy fats out there. And I think coming from the low fat craze of the 80s and 90s, this was something that I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I ate like that. This is so bad. Like I just thought fat was awful and fat would make me fat. And we really know that carbohydrates, anything can make us fat, right? If we're eating too much of it, but carbohydrates really make us eat more. It kind of tells our body to eat more. So it's one of those things we have to be really, really careful of. Don't really have to be that careful with fat. I mean, I think people who are in the ketogenic diet have to kind of work hard to figure out how to get the fat in their diet that they want. So for me, it's, you know, I have to be thoughtful of it, but I could get plenty of fat just by drizzling some olive oil on things, cooking in some, you know, some avocado oil or grass-fed butter, that kind of thing. But fat is important. We need it for healthy cell walls, which are made up of our lipids. We have to be careful of inflammatory fats. And I think this is probably one of the biggest sources, besides eating too many processed carbohydrates in the U.S. diet, is the processed oils that we get, like canola oil. And they're, if you look at canola oil and soybean oil, and there's all of these processed vegetable oils that are very inflammatory. They're not that healthy for us. They don't have a lot of omega-3 fatty acids or healthy sources of fats. Hydrogenated oils, honestly, they should just be banned. They're just so bad for us. So if you're sticking with healthy oils from avocados, from extra virgin olive oil, and especially if you're getting extra virgin olive oil that's been naturally processed, these are really, really healthy sources of fats, and they're necessary. We need them for hormones. We need them for our neurotransmitters. That we need them. I'm not a ketogenic diet person necessarily, but I do include fats in all of my meals to some degree, and I try to keep it at a healthy level for me. Okay. So I'm not necessarily a calorie counter, although you can be, and I kind of alluded to this before, but I do think it's helpful to be aware of what you're eating on a daily basis and either writing down what your plan is and being accountable to that plan, whatever you decide for it to be for you, what works for you, or at least keeping a log of the food that you're eating, because a lot of times we are not even aware of what we're eating. We've really outsourced our eating to other people, whether it's, you know, other people are cooking it for us or we're buying it from other places. We've really lost touch with what we're eating. So I do think that it's very, very helpful and probably essential as part of your plan to have a journal understanding why you're eating, when you're eating, and how you feel before and after. You can count calories and you can count macros. There's no right or wrong here. It just is going to be what you thrive at doing, what works for you. Does it help you to count calories, or do you become obsessed then with it and it becomes something that if you don't do it, you feel awful about, or, you know, you're having to force yourself to do it? So I think you have to really think about all of those different aspects.
I am so excited to announce that I will be rolling out the Better Body Formula, which is an online health coaching program to help my lady friends like me in midlife struggling to lose weight and feel good in their bodies. It is a step-by-step approach with coaching as part of the program and something that you can do at your own pace. So you could say goodbye to dieting and finally have an easy-to-follow formula, a formula that has taken years for me to develop because, yes, I was the guinea pig. I was the one going through all of these ups and downs and making all of these mistakes. But I've packaged all of those mistakes and all of the things that I've learned from my 2 certifications in health coaching, from all my knowledge about the human body, about the human brain, and about the life of a woman in midlife, a busy mom, a career woman, and how to implement the best program to finally take charge of your body, enhance energy, and learn how to listen to your body so that you're not having to go to experts and you're not having to go to books and people telling you, you know, totally different things. This is one program where you get to decide what is the best method for you and learn how to identify your unique roadblocks, the things that get in your way. I spent a lot of time self-sabotaging my weight loss efforts, and some of those were limiting beliefs that I had, and other reasons were totally physiological things that I didn't understand. If you want to get on the wait list, go ahead and click the link that's in the show notes. It is going to be an awesome program, self-paced. Like I said, it's going to have some coaching component to it, so I will be helping you throughout the way and helping you create awesome confidence that impacts your life in every way. To get on the wait list for the Better Body Formula, go to land.getbetterwithheather.com/betterbody. This is the wait list that I will use to send out email updates so that you are the first to know about this program when it becomes available, and I guarantee that there are going to be some awesome bonuses to the first few members of this program. So go ahead, sign up. All you have to do is put your email address in, and I will send you those updates.